Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for coming. I know you've had a long day, so we're trying to make it quite a light session as you head towards the pub. We've only just discovered that one of us has to be standing here because normally we'd both be sitting down. But yeah, one of us has to stand there to make this work. So as most of you marketers will know, we don't like being this side of the stage, as it were. But anyway, so thank you for coming. I'll introduce myself and let Andrew introduce himself, but we're both here from the Royal Shakespeare Company. I'm Director of Sales and Marketing, and as the name suggests, responsible for marketing, based in Stratford, but responsible for marketing the RSC wherever we are performing in the world, whether that's touring, our international work, Matilda the Musical, which some of you may have heard of, which is in the West End on Broadway and is about to open in Australia in the coming months. The RSC is one of those kind of cultural institutions that kind of, once you start working for it, you find it very hard to leave for all sorts of different reasons because they keep throwing interesting challenges at you. And I actually, in a few weeks' time, I would have been with the RSC for 25 years. So I feel when Una talked to us about this presentation, I feel at least we have a bit of history, a fair bit of history between us. I think between us we have kind of 43 years of RSC experience in the areas that we work in. To share some of our insight. So I'm Chris. I'll let Andy introduce himself.
Yeah, hi, I'm Andy Williams. I'm Head of Visual Communications and Art Director. So what I do is come up with creative ideas and I also do management. I'm kind of 50-50. But I've also been working at the RSC for a really long time. We're based in Stratford, which is, for those of you who don't know, that's where Shakespeare was born. We're essentially a producing theatre. So we do occasionally receive productions, but we do the whole canon of Shakespeare, we do Shakespeare's contemporaries, and we do new writing, like Matilda.
So, and in terms of, the RSC is a large organisation with about 1,000 employees, but actually in terms of marketing and design, it's still a very small group of people who have to deliver all that work, which I'm sure is very familiar to pretty much everyone in this room in terms of how far and how thinly you have to spread your resource. And in terms of what we're talking about today, that's kind of how we try and creatively come up with ideas for images that don't have to cost you a huge amount of money. It's not all about, there's sometimes a misconception that somewhere like the RSC has loads of money to throw at these kind of things. That isn't necessarily the case. So we're just going to share some of those ideas and thinking. When you talk about images, obviously, it's a matter of taste. We're thinking about our audiences all the time, and it is that really important thing. I was asked recently if I liked everything that we produced. And of course I don't like all the print that we produce necessarily because actually it's not for me. What the images have to do is have to speak honestly and to the type of people that you're trying to attract who are ultimately going to buy your tickets. So it's that kind of fine line between your own personal taste and then therefore what is right for your audience. And you have to absolutely separate the two. As this example demonstrates. So this is a current production we have of Love, Labour's Lost and Love, Labour's Won, which that image is not to my taste at all, I have to say. But we created it, but it absolutely, honestly represents the experience that people are going to have in terms of the setting and the people that are in it in the theatre. And I should also say, part of the aim of this session is we are absolutely not here to offer any kind of definitive view. I don't think there can be one in arts marketing. Every venue, every audience, all of those kind of things are different. There can't be a kind of one-size-fits-all. It sounds obvious, but it's worth just saying up front that we're not pretending that we have all the answers. We're just sharing some of our kind of experiences. And obviously, if you have any, please feel free. We're really not precious, so please comment on things kind of as we go. And we'll take questions at the end, but please don't hold back, because people don't. As again, you'll know, being marketeers, that people are very very ready and willing with their forthright opinions. So some of the questions that we kind of address each time we're thinking about a new piece of work is what do So you see there, how do you appeal to an audience? What do people want from an image? And how do you convey a complex idea in one image? Which is a very difficult thing to do quite often. From our point of view, from the RSC's point of view, Shakespeare only wrote 36 plays, or 37, depending on your point of view. And some of those plays are amazing. Some of them are fantastic. Some of them are terrible, certainly in my view. And they're really tough to sell. And our repertoire can therefore repeat itself quite quickly. You know, it's kind of, so how do you sell another Midsummer Night's Dream? How do you sell another Romeo and Juliet? What's different about that production? And one of the quickest and sharpest ways of doing that is through your visual imagery. People should be able to trust your brand. They know that the RSC producing Romeo and Juliet is should be, touch wood, of quality. But why should they come back and see that again? And this is one of the challenges that we face all the time. Obviously, your written copy is important. Casting, of course, plays a part in that. But as I say, the thing that you will get most use from that asset is your visual imagery. So, Andy, do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'll just put this slide in just to demonstrate that there are obviously three productions of Romeo and Juliet there. I think Chris said to me earlier that he'd worked on 10 productions of Romeo and Juliet. So the challenge we face is one of trying to kind of repeat, if you like, the same thing over and over again, but challenge the audience in a different way, because a lot of our audience are coming back to us. What struck me after I've made this slide was these look quite similar. That wasn't the point of the slide. But nevertheless, I think it's quite interesting that that we keep going, we keep reinventing it, and there's a beauty to all that in the sense that when you've done it several times, when you're talking to a director, you kind of know the play, so you don't have to prepare for the meeting. So that's quite a nice thing.
And I think it's running alongside all of this, and what we're really focusing on today, although there are other examples of non-show-related images, is what we've certainly found over the last number of years is the importance of visually representing the wider experience you're going to experience in your venue. It's absolutely about the show you're coming to see, but people need to get a wider sense of what you offer. Why are you different? Why should they come to you to see the Romeo and Juliet as opposed to going to somewhere else on tour? Because actually, it's just about as much about your venue and the kind of other facilities that you offer. And how do you visually represent those? It's really important. We will come on to that a little bit later, in a bit more detail. Do you need to be true to the idea? Our challenge is quite often, we program a long way in advance, and what we'll often know is, if you use the example of Romeo and Juliet again, we know we're doing Romeo and Juliet. We might not know who it's directed by. We certainly won't know who's in it at the point that we go on sale to our kind of long lead audiences. And that is a real challenge, because you've often got really, really scant information. But because we're repeating the plays a lot of the time, our job is to really honestly represent what we hope is to give them the experience that they're going to get. People come to the theatre for all sorts of reasons, and quite often many times I'm sitting in meetings where we're talking about, oh, do we want people to be challenged? Do we want people to think this? How do we want people to feel? But actually, ultimately, a lot of people, and there's nothing wrong with it, is they come to be entertained. And why should your marketing not try and convey that as much as that they're going to have an enjoyable experience? Yes, if they get other things out of that, but actually, fundamentally, at the end of the day, that's what they're coming for. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, I just thought this was quite an interesting example. I don't know if whether you have or you haven't, heard of Hilary Mantel's books, Bring Up the Bodies in Wolf Hall. We thought this was quite a useful thing to share, in the sense that when we first had the proposition that we were going to do the plays, Hilary had just won the Booker Prize, and we're in quite a good position, you know, in terms of like selling it to the audience. But one thing we'd learned is that several years previous to that, we'd done a production of Noughts and Crosses. I don't know if anyone knows that. What's she called?
Valerie Black.
That's it, yeah. And what we'd done is we created an image ourselves, and nobody was buying a ticket. And we quite quickly realised, I think it was Chris who realised, that what we should do is reference the book. So when we came back to this, we had the great benefit of hindsight. So if you're doing an adaptation of a book, look at the book cover and replicate that. It's a really good way to do it, because we found that it just worked beautifully for us. Because at this point, although we had the books to read, we didn't have a director, we had no cast. I don't we'd only just confirmed the dates before we went to print, so we were quite scant on knowledge, so we thought we'll take what we've learned from our previous experience and just replicate the book covers. I'm not ashamed of that. I think it was a really good thing to do, and we sold out. So, you know, that all worked well.
It's not just down to the image, because the books obviously were quite famous. And they were quite good about them.
Yeah.
But I think the point about Noughts and Crosses is a really good one. It was a really serious lesson for us, in that you try and reinvent. Sometimes you overthink things and you try and reinvent things, and actually the reason that those adaptations are made is because the books are really famous and the books are really popular, and actually if you don't play to those strengths, that you're fighting against yourself. And actually it really, really brought it home to us in kind of sharp focus. And as we're joking that obviously it sold out not because of the images, but there is a recognition in that, and you shouldn't, you know, I would say you shouldn't ignore that. But then as it goes on, so pre-opening of Stratford before we'd opened, you move on to...
Yeah, so just worth saying that, of course, by the time we got the cast, the thing became a different beast. So we stuck with that first image of the Tudor Rose and the... I can't remember what it is it a falcon or a hawk or something like that? But by the time we got the cast, of course, it became quite different. At this point, so it's just worth saying that in the life of our images for the same show, they change. They do change quite a lot. So we might start with a found image. We might then create an image when we've got the cast. And then after the show opens, we will take some photographs of the cast and use them. So we might have three versions of any image for a show. But it tends to be that the production images are the ones that really help us at the end. So the minute you've got a production image, get it out there. That's our advice, you know, that just keep it simple. When, as soon as the press call's done, off you go, because that really seems to help us from our experience of that. So the first version we had there was Stratford, this version is London, and then of course it's gone to Broadway, which is the next version, which is this one here. They've ended up feeling quite similar, I think. I don't be interested to know what anyone thinks about that, but they do feel a bit similar. But the big difference you'll notice is that in America, they didn't want to call it Bring Up the Bodies. So they called it Wolf Hall Parts 1 and 2, which is quite interesting in terms of being sensitive towards cultural difference. But they felt that was a much stronger proposition to their audience.
And it opens at Broadway next year, of course, as the BBC adaptation is just brilliantly timed to be screened. At the same time, it's tricky, those kind of the parts one and two thing, because different audiences don't quite understand, and they feel the commitment for buying both those parts is a really significant expense and theatre going commitment. And there will be a third book. There was only ever supposed to be two. She was never supposed to have written Bring Up the Bodies. It was supposed to go Wolf Hall, and then the second one was The Mirror and the Light, but she's writing the third one now and is informed by the third book is being informed by her experience of being so closely involved with us working on these two. I digress.
You're not selling the Royal Shakespeare Company very hard in that. I would have thought in going to the States you'd have been pumping that up.
Well,
there was some research, wasn't there?
There was. Also, Andy's picked a very poor example there. where you'll see the Royal Shakespeare Company production is across the top. Actually, you're right to your point. Actually, it is there. It's just on this particular visual it's not. Because actually, but it's an interesting one, because from our experience of Matilda, Roald Dahl's Matilda, of course, a lot of American audiences going, I had no idea Shakespeare wrote Matilda. So it's actually absolutely... it's counted against us. And for the very first time, we've made a change to our red box, which always sits top left, and we took the words Royal and Shakespeare and Company off, and it just three letters sit on the Matilda. If you're ever in New York, you won't see the words Royal, Shakespeare or Company, because it proved a barrier. But the reverse is absolutely true for Wolf Hall and Bring the Bodies. So in terms of, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but how do you make people feel the experiences for them? And that they belong, they feel comfortable with you, and they can imagine yourselves in your theatre and your venue. We have one of the, it sounds ridiculous, but one of the biggest challenges we have is how to visually represent our restaurant. So since we redeveloped our theatres in 2010, we now have a rooftop restaurant that sits on the, as you would imagine, on the rooftop. At the top of the building, and it's a really, really tricky thing to photograph and a thing to sell, but it's actually part of a very, very important part of our kind of core commercial business income. And how do you best sell that? And so we've done lots of, we've done pictures of the restaurant full of people, and we've done the with the restaurant empty, and all of those kind of things. Actually, what you focus on down to is, here's some photos of some delicious food that you will have in the restaurant, because actually that's why people are coming. It happens to be in a lovely setting, and it happens to be convenient that it's, you know, they can put their dessert spoon down and then go straight down to the theatre. That's very convenient. But actually, they want to see what kind of food they're going to be eating. And I do. And so I think that all of that is part and parcel of the kind of the whole experience. So do you want to?
I just want to make a point about how you can demonstrate the idea of a venue, just in general, but without saying anything too particular. So, when our new theatre opened in 2011. We had a need for an image that said, the theatre's open, it's on, something's happening, it looks really good, what a brilliant place, you really want to go, yeah? But you can't show specifically too close at the audiences, and you can't show a particular production, because it will focus people too clearly on one particular aspect of the wide range of things that we do. So we had this idea of taking a time-lapse photograph and making sure that there was some action, so we could get over the sense of what it was, a performance space reinvigorated, so you can see it's a thrust stage rather than the proscenium arch it was before. But there are really easy, simple, quick ways of tackling what seem like quite difficult problems. One of the other things that I wanted to just say in terms of being helpful about how to solve some of these, when your marketing director says, we've got to solve this and you've got to do it now, one of the tools in your armoury is to use some typography. That's the next one. It might seem a subtle point, but I don't think it is to an audience. If you see there, if we just put the branding on it, you'd have never thought that image was for Hamlet, yeah? But you put the branding on it and put a type heading on it. So use your typography to help you. The idea is that you don't look at images in isolation, but look at the assets that you've got and create some assets. And it's just like making a cake, really. Just get all your ingredients in. And if you mix it right, you'll get what you need. It's not as hard as it kind of looks, but it might have taken us quite a long time to realise it. I think it would be fair to say. But I just put a different title on this, just to see how you don't feel the need to absolutely spell it out. You know, you can be more general, and it can help you get quite far in terms of making sure that the audience understand a certain amount of things. If you haven't got much to say, don't say it. Only say as much as you can say at any given point.
No. It's interesting as well. It's a small point, but about how images can help you within your building. To that point about making people feel welcome and people feeling comfortable. It wasn't my idea. I can't claim it was Andy's. But this kind of image, a different version of this image, but the auditorium is we've lined our lifts with them, so that as you step into the lift to travel up and down the building, it feels like you're standing on the stage. In a theatrical way, so it's about just using those assets and kind of you step in, people go, oh yeah, that's great, I feel like I'm standing on the RST stage. Small things, not rocket science, we're not reinventing the wheel, but just interesting ideas about how you can maximise your assets within your building to make it feel as welcoming and as... because for some people, certainly for the RSC, crossing the threshold is a really tricky thing. And so those kind of small touches that you can use through imagery, I think make a really big difference. So... In terms of what works and why, we've a few thoughts and a few examples, but as I kind of said at the top of it, we're still working out what works and why, because actually everything you do is different, every production you do is different, everything brings different challenges, different audiences. Very interesting hearing about the touring session, the previous session, about, you know, we're a touring venue as well, and what we take out to our touring venues as well, and what they want back from us, kind of from visually as well, is really important. Do you want to talk about Coriolanus?
Yeah, we just want to... So there's lots of ways you can approach it. And one of the things that we need to do sometimes is use shock tactics. You know, I don't know how many of you know of Coriolanus. I wouldn't claim to be an expert, but this is quite a bloody play. And if you recognise that actor, you maybe can't. It's called Toby Stevens, who's now actually quite a famous actor, but at this point he wasn't. And we sometimes get a really brief slot with an actor. 20 minutes, something like that. And so it's amazing what you can do in that time. And this is actually before my time, so do you want to...
I mean, it's just, as Andy said, it's about kind of how you can treat your images, because this was done in the Newcastle season prior to going to London. It was 20 minutes, it was in someone's office, done very quickly, and it was the reason, the tagline, you may not be able to read it, is a natural born killer too. And this is an old shot, because this was when the film, the Oliver Stone? Do I mean Oliver Stone? Yeah. Natural Born Killers. Is that, so it's kind of referencing, kind of as we talked about earlier, kind of borrowing ideas from kind of contemporary culture to make it feel relevant, particularly with Shakespeare. And Coriolanus ain't a popular play generally. It really is one of the lesser popular titles. So how you can use something like this to kind of really cut through to a different type of audience. In Stratford, it played in the Swan Theatre, which is 400 seats, and when it transferred to London, it transferred to the Barbican, which is 1,100 seats. So from a commercial point of view, the pressure was really on. And so that's when we know the show. Obviously, we're in a better position at this point because we're very familiar with the show because it's played in Stratford for a number of months. But to try and cut through, to try and reach a different type of audience, which I think it did, but it was before we were quite sophisticated in our audience research as we are now. But we like to think so. But it's still cited as an image that lives long in people's memories. And actually, if you can do that, then obviously that's a really powerful tool as well.
This is a really interesting example. We did a play called The Orphan of Zhao, which is a Chinese play, directed by Greg Durant, who's our artistic director, and it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. You can see from the quotes on the thing, it was amazing. There was one point in the play where a baby gets its neck broken, and the whole crowd kind of shrieks as this carrot, which was inside the model of the baby, it snaps in half, and it sounds just like you'd imagine it might do. And it was quite an extraordinary evening, but we couldn't get anyone to go. And I suppose passing on the lessons of what we learnt about that was that we think, anyway, that the run was just too long. That it's quite a kind of niche idea. So however good the production is, if it's on too long, you can't shift it. It doesn't kind of matter. So I suppose what we want to say to you is that when you're talking to the people who programme your artistic work, be clear with them that it's not, you can't put it on for too long. You know, it's a really important conversation to have, because otherwise it'll come back to you and say, well, why is there nobody in there? You say, well, I said to you, it was on too long. And that's the thing, you know, it's... I suppose the point we're really making is that there's a real... Obviously, we'll do everything we can to sell a show and respond as well as we possibly can, but it actually comes back to the artistic programme.
And I think the important point there is how closely those two things work together. As I say, I've been at the RSC for a long time, and when I first started at the RSC, marketing was called publicity, and it covered pretty much... It covered everything, press, everything. The marketing wasn't a specific... recognised profession, I guess, and it's right. It was certainly not considered important necessarily by artistic teams, and that has, and I would hope everyone kind of in the room agrees that actually it's a very, very, very different place now. You know, marketing and programming are absolutely the heart of a lot of organisations, because you are, as Andy says, delivering the audience, and your voice has to be heard in that. There will be times, of course, you know, it doesn't matter. We're doing this and we're doing it, but actually having that. And I know, I thought this would run longer than it indeed had legs for, in truth, and it ran too long. And it was a really, really, really tough sell. And so what you end up doing is trying to reinvent your marketing all the time and using different imagery and different kind of things. But actually, we just had to let it play out in the end. But not dwelling on that too long. But Richard Seppin?
Yeah, so this was a gift. Here we are, here's David Tennant, Richard II, pressure's off. Me and Chris just went to the pub, and that was it. That's no problem. We probably could have just put the words Richard II with David Tennant, and we would have sold out. But we thought we'd take the opportunity to maybe try and do something a bit more about the brand. So I don't know if anyone else has this as a kind of brand issue, but one of the things that we have is that we're creating new versions of old things. So we have really old players, but we're putting them on in a new version, and there's a tension at the heart of the brand, which is you saying this is an old thing, but we're doing it in a new way. So I thought we'd take the opportunity to put David Tennant in a new setting, but contrast him against the old, and link the two with the scepter. See what we did there? With the scepter? And that, and just on a really minor point, that all went well, and blah, 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 blah. It was what really helped us, though, was it was a really minor procedural thing for you to think about, was putting it on a white background just made everything really easy. Reproduction in newspapers, online, we could put whatever messages we wanted all around it, and it quickly became, it saved us hours and hours and hours of work. It was just became a very straightforward thing, and of course it sold out. I don't need to tell you that. So that was it. So our life was easy. So if we could have David Tennant every week, it'd be brilliant. But of course we don't.
But it's another example of from our work, where casting is important, because Richard II, again, is a beautiful play, but not a very, it's not necessarily box office gold. And putting someone like David Tennant in that does make a huge difference. And that was an example of where, in truth, the image never really changed. It managed to go from kind of almost from day one, pretty much, bar one or two production shots in certain areas, but it pretty much went from opening to closing with a single image, which is your kind of dream, really. The ideal is that you don't have to change that through. It's just that through necessity, or as we have had, I've sat at my desk sometimes going, oh, gee, we've missold that, because it's been such a long time in advance. We've come up with an image. I kind of think I feel really that I don't feel I'm honestly representing that experience to people. So you have to make some fairly radical changes to how you visually represent some things. How to appeal to different audiences with a single image is that you can read, obviously. This is a really tricky one for us again at the RSC. We receive significant public funding, most significant from the Arts Council, with a remit to appeal to the broadest and widest possible audience, with some pretty tough targets and some pretty tough challenges within that. I mean, we're based in Stratford-upon-Avon, which has a very specific demographic. Public transport is difficult, and all of those kind of things as well. So it's quite challenging. But I suppose what we would hope that doesn't ever lead us into is really bland corporate messaging, which kind of is that kind of one size fits all. And of course, and we'll talk in a minute a little bit more about kind of the digital avenues that are available to you. But of course, what that does mean now is that you're able to segment your audiences much more effectively. We use a kind of, we segment all our audiences in Stratford through a behavioural model. So it's a kind of the propensity of the way people will behave. We use a kind of production life cycle, because we have very long lead audiences and we have much shorter lead audiences as well. And we use a kind of this model called how we grow, we acquire them, we grow them, we retain them. And if we've lost them, how do you win them back? And a lot of that is done through kind of, obviously, our marketing materials in terms of, and at the core of that is the visual imagery. Good, that's good. That's all very good. I can't now remember what the slide. Oh, there you go. So this is actually picking up the point about this idea of a production life cycle, about not knowing very much about a show at the beginning, apart from what it is, the title often, and how you move that through, and how you then repurpose. The images you have, or what you know, as you get nearer and nearer to opening, and then kind of when you're into a running campaign. And this is a recent production at Arden of Faversham.
And what's worth saying about this is if you, we're all for Simplify, aren't we?
We are.
Simplify. In the first instance, we had just the idea of Arden of Faversham, didn't have a director, we kind of knew what it was about. If you look on Wikipedia, it's all there. So we thought, we need a found image really quick. We're going to print today. We've got to try and raise £1 million worth of revenue. What are we going to do? It's going to go to print. So let's have a look. Now, there's some websites. There's quite a few websites. I don't know if you're familiar with any of them. But so there's all the image libraries who will charge you. But there are also some image libraries that will give you images for free. I don't know if you know this, but it's a really useful thing to know. There's a site called Image After. and there's one called Stock Exchange, which is based in Hungary, I think. There's also Creative Commons. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that on Wikimedia. And those are all really useful things. So what you end up doing is sourcing a found image, which just becomes about no faces, no costume really, no nothing. It just gives you a sense of what's happening. And then you'll see we got quite a lot further down the line, and we ended up... by this time we had casting, so at this point we can create a photograph with the actors in a studio with a photographer. Then we get to production image. So straight, as I was saying before, straight away, first dress rehearsal, photograph, straight through to our department, get one chosen, mock them up, put the titles on, speak to the director, sign it off, make sure Chris is happy, and then off we go, straight into the press. And but we found that we needed to do some more versions of this, just to try and appeal to different audiences. So we had a series of plays on that were called The Roaring Girls, which is three plays written by men, unfortunately, but they all had strong female protagonists in them, and they were done very much from a feminist point of view. And so we approached... So these are just some of the different ideas you can kind of take as an approach. One was just to kind of spell out the plot and how it works and reduce it down to a really simple idea that people can understand. Alice is in love, not with her husband, and he must die. And that's kind of, you know, appeal to some people.
It was a cheery play.
We do have quite a tough sell sometimes with some of the players we've got. And then we tried a kind of, obviously this in danger of walking into cliches here, but we wanted to appeal to women because this season was for women. Incidentally, about 65% of our audience are women. And those who aren't, the decision makers in ticket buying are women, and just how it should be. And so we decided to do like a magazine that covered the three plays in the series and tried to sell it in a kind of, you know, Hello Magazine kind of way. And all of these things contributed. So what we're saying is keep it simple, but you don't have to allow yourself just one approach. You can take many approaches to the same thing. What we really care about is that people are seeing the art on the stage. It's really important.
And I think an important point here is that, and I'm sure everyone in the room knows this, but just for the sake of saying it, is don't underestimate the power of production shots, and therefore don't underinvest on your production shots. That doesn't mean that you have to kind of spend tens of thousands of pounds, but actually your production shots are some of your greatest assets. And because the nature of marketing is changing, so whether that's digital 48 sheets or if you're blowing your artwork up really, you've got to have really good quality production shots. We've had a problem recently where we tried out a new photographer a couple of times, and actually we've had real problems then with the images and that we need to use them in the format and the quality that we kind of need. Now part of that is briefing your photographer and making sure they follow your brief, obviously. But we tried to cut corners before, and I think those kind of our shows run a long time, but those things come back to bite you. You know, they really do. I would much rather look at, as Andy was describing, look for those kind of royalty-free images at the start of the season for those long-lead audiences who need less persuading, so that you're holding some money back to invest in your production shots kind of further down the line. Talking to Una in advance of this session, actually, from Arts Audiences, one of the things she was talking about was this kind of thing about, which we've referenced a bit with the restaurant conversation earlier, but this thing about images with or without people, and what does that say to you about your venue? And you know, if you see yourself in there, is that good? There is another school of thought, which is if it's empty, then you can picture yourself in there. You're not picturing yourself amongst those people that are already existing. I don't know. Does anyone have a show of hands on the left? Better on the right? Less, but why the right? Interested? Anyone prepared to share? With all those people, it's terrible. But I know, and it's interesting, and we kind of move between the two. But interesting, is someone prepared to share why the one on the left? If someone picked the left,
shows the kind of experience that you're going to have.
Yeah. More
So it shows the tension kind of between those two things. And actually, that, of course, there is no right or wrong answer, except that there'll be a right time to use the one on the left, and there's a right time to use the one on the right, depending on what it is. And obviously, you would never hope that your theatre would look empty like that, obviously. In terms of print versus digital, in marketing terms, we're in a bit of a contradiction with ourselves, because from a brand perspective, we're trying to offer consistency across all of our channels. So wherever you see that show, you're seeing the same kind of visual asset. But of course, what digital does allow you to do is to use different images to target very different kinds of audiences. So we find it's a bit of a dilemma, although I like to think of it as being flexible. And so you are able to make much faster decisions in terms of, and you're able to do a bit of testing in terms of what's working, particularly with our website and kind of with the emails that we push out, some kind of A-B testing in terms of what's resonating with people and what's not. And then that can inform our print kind of strategy going forwards, because, again, it's obvious, but once you've printed something, you've printed it in a way that, of course, that isn't the same for digital. It does give you that flexibility.
The great thing about having print and digital in your armoury is that as an audience member, you can decide which one you like. Do you like the big poster outside the theatre? Or do you like the animated GIF on the website? You can decide. So it's my view that you almost don't need to make a decision. What you need to do is both. And then you just widen your offer to as many people as possible and, bring them in. You know, that's the job.
So in terms of summing up, and we've got time for questions if anyone has any questions. So it's a kind of where it's really important to be as honest as you can. Give the best and most honest representation with the information you have at the time. Because that can come back and bite you if people feel that you've misrepresented the experience they're going to have. You will always get it right. And I remember a show we had 10 years ago now, which was all period dress, got to, suddenly it was in the 1970s disco. And you kind of I don't know what you want to do with that. But actually the show opened, it was very good, and it was very successful. But there's still a portion of audience who kind of go, that isn't what you sold me. It wasn't online, it was much more print-based, but you kind of go, there's people in Afro wigs and 70s disco, go, that absolutely isn't what you promised me. So being as honest as you can is really important. We've talked a bit about this, about paying, it's really important to pay as much as attention to your experience images as the show images, or at least a lot of attention. I suppose the experience images should never trump the show image, but it is those things about your restaurant, your kind of your public spaces, your bars. I don't know anyone, and maybe there's someone in this room who has achieved it, but to find a genuinely engaging picture of someone in the theatre bar having a nice time with a glass of wine that doesn't look forced, or that doesn't look like a kind of terrible, you're having a really weird time with people that you would never see in your building. So putting, again, time and attention into those is really important. Digital channels, do you want to talk about that?
Which bit? I think I've maybe covered that point already. Just to say that... there isn't a distinction, I don't think. You've got to use your media consistently. I have an awful lot of conversations which are around, can we make that website piece there look the same as the image outside? So one of the things you have to do now, if we're creating an image, it has to work like that, like that, like that. There used to be a brilliant time where you could just do a medium format camera, shot on film, jobs were good. Over, that's it, finished. But you can't do that now. You've got to be flexible with all your approaches. And the digital channels mean that the proportions and the formats are really, really different. And you just have to take that into account when you're making the images.
I think in terms of where we say find the right photographer that understands you, your brand and your venue. Forming those relationships with photographers is really important. I mean, but it really doesn't have to mean that has to be expensive. It's someone that is eager, hungry to learn, that understands you and will kind of, and is in the fabric of the building, they will understand that. But relationships with the photographers are really, really important. And as I say, that, but you don't have to. You might feel it's appropriate, but you don't have to pay over the odds for that. You know, people find work for arts venues, or certainly for theatre, you know, they find it creatively rewarding a lot of the time, because they're able to have an input into the process and those kind of things. Well, and don't underestimate how that important that is to kind of, and certainly to some of the photographers we work with. Do you want to do next?
Yeah, relative free images, as I said, there's lots of free images out there, just use them. You know, and if they're not quite right, put your brand on it and put some typography on it and change the message. Just change it. You can change that. If you really get into trouble, put a strap line on it, dream something up. You know, and by the time you've mixed all those ingredients together, you'll get something which is all of the things we're describing, which is true to the experience. And you can express yourself properly in terms of what the proposition is to the audience and make it feel like it's for them.
And it is worth investing some time in searching those things. Often we, you know, as I'm sure you all do, you kind of go, oh, I kind of want that kind of style of photography. You're that really famous photographer that does that kind of thing. Quite often you can find there's other photographer royalty-free images that follow that kind of style. And as Andy says, by the time you drop the typography on it and your branding, actually you've created exactly the same feeling and kind of emotional connection with that. But you don't have to be paying, again, thousands and thousands of dollars. We are very, very thrifty. Interestingly, images, we've talked a lot here about how much they are our greatest assets, but in terms of what we annually spend on them, in the creation of those, and that's a lot of shows across a year, across the RSC's work, it hasn't really ever increased, and it's not a huge amount of money. It's somewhere in the region of £20,000. Sounds a lot, I know, for some, but in terms of the number of shows we produce and the places it has to be, it's still a really modest amount of money. We're thrifty, and we work hard for our images to find them.
Yeah.
Editing.
I've just got to really briefly say about editing. One of the biggest jobs is editing. So you've got your photographer, you've got your done your show, brilliant, director's happy, everyone's happy, actors are kind of happy. And you get this massive ream of 300 images back. My advice, I looked at it a few times. When I first used to do it, I used to think, oh no, how do I decide? And actually, you only need to know one thing, and that is just trust your instincts. Look through it, and just see which one you like, and then suggest that one. And everybody's a bit scared of choosing them. So just be confident about your choice, trust your instincts, and it'll all go through beautifully. I promise you.
Yeah, right. but there is an important point that if you've been part of that, if you're part of creating that brief, you do have a second or a sixth sense even of what those images should end up looking like. So it is a really important just to trust your instinct, because actually you know what you're trying to achieve. And as long as you're confident in that, then you know honing that down shouldn't be too onerous a task. And then the last point is just saying keep it simple, keep it simple, keep it simple. You know, we have in the past, as I said earlier, we've overthought things, and it kind of comes back to bite you. And actually, sometimes the simplest ideas are by far the best ideas. Never underestimate the power of a very beautifully realised portrait of an actor or an artist. Those kind of making that emotional connection with people. You know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time, and you really don't. And so, the simpler it is, the better.
I'll just give you one small tip for photographing actors. They tend to be a bit surprisingly awkward in front of the camera. One thing you can do in that situation is give them a prop. That really helps. If the shoot isn't going well, just change one thing. You know, it can be their coat, where they're standing or whatever, but just change one thing, move the lights around or something, and you'll find it all takes on a new lease of life. The other thing is that if you do see an actor there and they're struggling to know what to do, just say to them, be yourself, and you'll find you get whatever you need. Whatever you do, get into a conversation about, well, King Lear would do this, King Lear would do that. Don't go there. Stop that conversation and just say be yourself, and you'll find within the frames that you'll find something which is worth using, because it's a great medium. And actually a portrait of somebody is fantastically compelling if they're just being themselves, far, far better than if they're pretending to be somebody else.
And so that... In theory, there'd be a slide there that went, thank you. and any questions?
At the very start, you had an illustration for Comedy of Errors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
times where you think maybe an illustration is better than a photograph or a character image?
Yeah, very loosely speaking, I think if we have an idea of a shirt that is to appeal to a family audience, we might go with the illustration. It kind of comes and goes. Funnily enough, the illustration process is a lot more drawn out, and detailed. Sorry?
That was a good pun, drawn out.
Yeah, drawn out. And it's actually it's a bit more of a bumpy road than a photograph. So it actually depends on us knowing more in advance. I love working with illustration. That illustration at the front of the Comedy of Errors was supposed to be a joke about our presentation. But that designer there, Bob Lilly, we got a brilliant designer who was very fashionable at the time.
And so you would commission rather than coming across an illustration and going, actually, that works.
Yes, that's a really good point. That's generally how it would work. So you might find a photograph, but you would commission an illustration.
Yeah. And did that illustration sell that show very well?
I don't know. Because that is from about 1985, I think, and even we weren't there.
It's that interesting thing where there's a whole series of these, and the RSC commissioned even before my time, believe it or not. Ralph Steadman did a whole load of posters as well, kind of very famous posters, which in our kind of poster archive, which you can buy. But it was of a time when the RSC didn't really have to market itself very much, in truth. We were pretty much full all the time. We didn't have to work very hard. And so these were much more souvenir items rather than... The whole process has shifted now because, like everyone, we're working harder and harder and harder to capture people's attention and capture people's money. So these kind of images were more souvenir kind of posters bought through the shop rather than marketing images themselves. But I think the illustration point, you know, as Anne said, we would often... For our family show, which we do each year, we've often used an illustration. But it's that tricky thing where a photographer, once this photograph is captured, there's only so much you can kind of do with it. Whereas in truth and illustrator, you kind of get into this process where you can kind of keep changing it, or they're not happy with it, or we're not happy with it, and it sometimes feels that process can never have an end.
So you would keep working with the illustration, like you could actually get a sketch or a preliminary draft, and then kind of go.
Yeah, it's quite hard actually to tell from a preliminary sketch. I mean, you could, but it ends up being less satisfactory. If you could, out of maybe five illustrations, you'll maybe get two or three right, I would say. The last one we did we had a feminist production of Peter Pan called Wendy and Peter Pan, which is very good. And it's coming back next year.
Although not announced.
Oh, sorry.
You heard it here first.
And, we had an illustrator do some work on that. What you find is that the director of the show, really lovely guy, but as he was going through the process of getting nearer and nearer to the production, he was changing his mind about what the production was about. So running alongside him was us and the illustrator trying to keep up with him. It didn't kind of work, really, because there's this limit to what you can do illustratively to keep up with somebody's changing ideas, as I'm sure you know. If you know a long way in advance, it's maybe a better, an already known kind of beast, you can commission an illustration much earlier on.
Hello.
I'd just like to ask three simple questions. Copyright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Necessary information for the purchaser of the tickets, etc. For your audience.
For the purchaser of what, sorry?
How do you actually handle that to get that on? Very strong image.
Yeah.
And you have sometimes a three course menu.
Yeah.
So the last time you want to tell them to get the information, how do you handle that and maintain the strength of the image? Okay, and the last question was, you mentioned three websites. One was Stock Exchange.
Yeah.
Could you repeat the others?
Yes, what's called www.imageafter.com.
Image Action.
After.
imageafter.com.
And the other one?
If you Google Wikimedia Creative Commons, it will take you to the site. So on there, it's a wonderful resource of So you, in England at least, I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the, with Irish law and if it's different, and it does differ from country to country, but in England, if the author of a painting has been dead for 50 years, I think it is, I mean, it might be 70, it will tell you on the image. You can take the high resolution image and use it yourself. You can change it. All you need to do is accredit the use of it. So you put a little tiny little credit on the bottom saying where you got it from.
In terms of your first copyright is tricky. We spend a lot of time having, if they're not royalty free, there's that can be quite time consuming. But that time can be cheaper than you having to create something new quite often. So, but you know, rights is a really thorny issue, and we have someone that works in Andy's team that kind of specialises in that kind of area. But it's a thorny one. And in terms of your second question, I think, yeah, it's just, for us, you're right, if you, the three-course menu is a good way of describing it, but it's about how, at each stage of the process, we're doing something very consciously. So we're kind of doing it with the information that we have at the time. And as I say, when we feel, and we have done this, where we feel that we've maybe missed, it's something we've sold you 6 months ago isn't shaping up to be the thing that you think it is now, we have written to people to kind of be upfront about that. What we found has worked best is if the direct... we've written, obviously, but it comes under the name of the director or the designer or the producer, so it kind of feels like it's coming from the kind of creative part of the organisation. But it's just about being really honest as much as you can be. Hopefully you don't get into that situation where you have to kind of apologise for what you've sent them before, but at the same time, if that is true, you just have to take it on the chin and kind of... And for the most part, we had this recently, a few people cancelled, but most people were kind of like, that's great. That's good. Thank you for keeping me, you know, informed about the work, and that's great. And I look forward. I'll see you in a month's time or whatever it is.
That wasn't quite what I meant. I was getting more of how do you handle that necessary block of information without taking away from the strength of the image that you're using.
We have a lot of stuff that goes on our images. That there's a lot of kind of, you know, logos, branding, arts council, all of that kind of stuff. It's a really tricky thing, but it's part of the design process. In terms of, we know that. And you can't really look at an image. It's slightly disingenuous to look at an image like that and think that's how you're going to see it, because you're not, because you're going to see it with the red box in the corner, with this here, with the box office number on, all of those kind of things. So we have to consider that from the outset.
Probably just be worth saying that when we capture an image in a camera, we would allow for that. So I would do a rough sketch of the image, and then we would ask the photographer to pretty much keep it. You know, you can drive the options, you can do a few different things, but this is the bottom line of what we need to do. And in that sketch, I'll allow for all the stuff that goes at the bottom, and the logos at the top, and where the title goes, and that kind of thing. And does that answer your question? Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Is there a question? Hi.
Hi.
Quite not different from Arts and Disability Ireland. I know that they have done a lot of work around assistive performances, captioning, audio description, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And what I'm wondering is, how do you market that alongside this visual work, or do you include it in your posters, flyers, etc.? How do you deal with that?
It's a really good question. We have just gone through a process of redesigning our accessibility. We have a big newsletter, which is kind of massive, and we went through a process of testing all our typography on it. So what we do is we take all the colour out of it, we make it black and white, and we have a certain size limit as well, and we even got the font checked out so that it was as legible as it could possibly be. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
No, I was just wondering, obviously you have that marketing which is directly to, let's say, visually impaired audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you have the bigger issue of trying to get their families and friends and get people to come as viewers.
What
I'm wondering is, essentially I'm asking the question is it an entirely separate marketing stream, or do you include it in your general marketing as well?
We do include it in our general marketing, but there is a running alongside that, there is a separate marketing stream, because it's a slightly separate conversation, but we have been underachieving in terms of the people taking up some of our kind of assisted performances, and we're kind of trying to address that. We've just employed an access programs manager to kind of address some of those things that the kind of things that you're referring to, really. But that doesn't mean that the stuff And what Andy's trying to say as well is that the stuff that we send to our specific audiences around that doesn't mean that that isn't beautifully designed.
Yeah.
It's just, it can be large, you know, yeah. Images are there, all of those kind of things, because you shouldn't feel that you're having a second-rate experience in terms of marketing.
Yeah, I suppose that was actually, you come to the point of, which is that it does seem that there are issues around not having quite cracked a lot of people, and I would include arts and disability in Ireland in this, the absolute ideal or best ways of actually achieving the targets in a similar way to what you would with your regular audience.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. But again, we have target, you know, we absolutely, that gets part of our Arts Council funding in terms of attracting or, you know, including people with visual impairments and those kind of other disabilities. I'm conscious we're pretty much out. There's one more question.
Is it more important to sell the story or the production?
Well, it's at
the production.
I think that's true. But we're in a slightly different, because we're doing, a lot of the time we're doing classical work. So you're kind of, it's kind of the point we said earlier, which is, why should you come and see Romeo and Juliet again? You know, why should you come and see this one? So actually we're trying to say this production has this take on it. That said, certainly with Shakespeare, all of the feedback we get back is, tell me the story. So you're selling the production visually, but at the same time in your copy, don't assume that people know what Romeo and Juliet's about. Don't assume that people know what Midsummer Night's Dream's about. And we get that feedback a lot. It's like, you've written some beautifully lyrical copy, but it doesn't tell me what it's about. You're assuming, and it doesn't quite sit alongside this very beautiful image. You know, it's kind of the copy and the image have to go hand in hand, because they're doing different things. But people, particularly with Shakespeare, there is a fear of Shakespeare. People want to know the story, and a presumption that you... that people know more than you think.
Yeah, there's a really good use for digital, I think, in that sense. A couple of years ago, we did a production of Candide, which is very plot heavy and quite difficult for people to understand who aren't familiar with it. So we did. Does anyone know what parallax means? I'm not sure I do, really. It's a kind of digital thing that goes like that, and it goes and moves around. But what you can do is you can do the synopsis. We've got an illustrator to draw out all the scenes. You could scroll through and get a visual synopsis of the play. So that's how we solved that one.
Good. Well, thank you for your time and your attention. I'm not sure where people are supposed to be now. I think there's a closing session in the main hall in 10 minutes, yeah? But thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. This isn't your memory stick, Andy.